Committee, April 11th, 2012. We have a public hearing to start with, and the following two items are scheduled for public hearing. 71-12 Boston College petitioning for a grant of location to remove poles numbers 404/1 through 404/15, a total of 15 utility poles on the east side of College Road and installing the following. And 1,150 feet duck back within College Road from the intersection on Hammond Street and College Road, notably thence turning easterly to an existing manhole on private property. B, 300 feet of duck back in Hammond Street from the intersection of College Road and Hammond Street, northwesterly to pole number 195/23. C, 3 telecommunication handholes in Hammond Street at poles 192/23, 192/24, and 192/25. D, 5 6-foot by 6-foot manholes in College Road at the following locations: the intersection of College Road and Hammond Street, 200 feet north of the intersection, 400 feet north of the intersection, 550 feet north of the intersection, and 750 feet north of the intersection. Next one, 71-12 Perens 2, Boston College petition for a grant of location to install 8 ornamental light poles and fixtures in the east side of College Road at the following location, 50 feet northeast of the College Road and Beacon Street intersection, 250 feet northeast of the College Road and Beacon Street intersection, at the intersection of College Road and Quincy Road, 150 feet northeast of College Road and Quincy Road near 58 College Road, 350 feet northeast of the College Road and Quincy Road intersection between 72 and 78 College Road, 550 feet northeast of the College Road and Quincy Road intersection near 90 College Road, 400 feet south of the College Road and Commonwealth Avenue intersection near 102 College Road, 200 feet south of the College Road and Commonwealth Avenue intersection between 116 and 122 College Road. And that's that. Okay. I'm going to open the public hearing first, and then we'll discuss it in the committee. Anybody here wish to speak for or against this petition?
The petitioners?
Everybody who wants to speak, whether you are.
Oh, I'm Jean Levesque. I'm the Director of Government Relations.
Could you give us your name and address, please?
Jean Levesque. I'm the Director of Government Relations at Boston College, 140 Commonwealth Avenue, Chestnut Hill, Mass. And I have other folks here with our team for the petitions.
I'm Tom Redding with Boston College Capital Projects. Same address. That's okay.
I'm Griff Ryder, Central Engineer. I'm a project manager for the project. I work with PHP. That's how you know.
Terrence Leahy, Boston College. Same address.
Mary Gorham, we have the same in the industry as the private residence on College Road, 66 College Road.
Is anybody else who wishes to speak for or against? Nobody. All right, I'm going to close the public hearing.
Do you want to say something? I'm here
because
I'm a resident.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I just asked and I didn't hear it. But go ahead.
And I'm wondering what's going on, and because we're the only resident on the street, that we're just going to do it up and make sure that everything regardless of who is there. I'm not really sure what's coming.
Presentation.
Can we have our staff present it so that she can hear what's going
and
on the rest
understand.
Of us, and then it might answer some of her questions.
Okay, all right. John, if you would, please.
Sure. In case you didn't understand the verbal description, if you want to come over here, I can show you graphically.
I got the
agenda. Okay. I was just going to give a summary of what's happening. I think. Essentially, we've got utility poles that from Baps Library all the way down to the Hammond Street intersection. They're going to be taken down. There's approximately 15 utility poles. And every odd pole has a streetlight on it, one of the old Cobrahead streetlights. Mm-hmm. Once those streetlights and the poles are taken out, Boston College is proposing ornamental castle lights that we put in. They'll be similar to the lights that are on the campus. Mm-hmm. In association with that, underground electrical conduit work will be put in for all the buildings on the westerly side of College Road to feed all the electrical services for every building, including your property. Here, number 66? Yes. In some portions of the condo will be within the sidewalk, some portions will be in the street. Because College Road is only 18 feet in average, it's really choked with utility, so it's going to meander in and out of the right of way and also within the sidewalk and the pavement itself. In concert with that, they're proposing a telecommunications duct bank to go from this location all the way down to Hanlon Street up to a utility pole. And in that duct bank will be a spare line for the fire alarm that will be connected to the utility pole. That's back here in the between number 66 and 72. There's a utility pole that services overhead wires, and it's called backyard construction. Those wires will remain, but everything on College Road so will be eliminated.
Okay,
and then once all this is done, they'll restore the whole street to back to the condition that it's in. 5 years ago, we reconstructed the whole street with new curb and sidewalks, and they will be replacing it in kind.
Okay, that's it. Mm-hmm. So why at this point are you doing this construction now? I'm still a resident on the street.
Could I just add for the record, again, mm-hmm. My name is Jean Lebeck, I'm the Director of Government Relations. We have been in contact with Patrice O'Neill. She is my contact at the house. And I sent her an email about the project. We've been in contact about other issues at the property. I sent her an email, and I called her twice, and she never responded. So we've tried diligently to outreach and tell her about the project, specifically the timing of it with the Stokes project and how we looked at taking the lights down 2 or 3 years ago, maybe longer, with the city when College Road was done. But now that this is an opportunity with the project being ongoing, and we also were in touch with her when the Stokes project was going, doing the blasting. I have her email, her phone number. There she is.
Yes.
Yes. I was just saying I sent you an email and tried to call you to let you know about this project about 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
Or longer. So I just want to go on record that we did try. We were not ignoring our. We realized that they're the only house that's private owner on the street. And I believe we have a good working relationship. I just didn't hear back from you.
Can I ask the presenters, I mean, besides making a wonderful visual impact on the neighborhood, does it have any particular impact on this house?
If anything, it will raise the value of the property because now everything's being upgraded. I believe their service might be a little older, so that service connection may also be upgraded as well. So there's added value to the property.
And John, the goal of doing all this is to operate electrical in order to do what?
You know, aesthetics of the roadway itself. It's a nice road that's been reconstructed. There's a signature building that's being constructed as we speak, a $60 million project that Stokes Hall, which is right beneath your hand right there.
Okay.
And then it enhances public safety, too. There's less poles in the street. It's a very tight road as it is, and our concern is, you know, public safety of all pedestrians and vehicles traveling the roadway. So it's a win-win proposition for the city.
May I ask the people who are here what their addresses are so that we can just see where they're...
66.
Okay. And all these other residences here, the other addresses, are college-owned?
Yes.
Okay. And do you have an objection to this? I mean, if so, what is your objection?
Well, I'm not sure I understand how disruptive it's going to be to the tenants who live in that house. Have no electricity, for how long, when the outages will occur. Problems always arise no matter what we're doing.
I mean, glass all is bad enough.
Oh, excuse me, madam. Can I have your name and address?
Patrice O'Neill.
And your address?
66. Oh, no, 10 Lack Street, Waterbound.
Thank you. Not where?
And what relationship do you have to 66 College Road?
We're part of the O'Neill Industries LLC that manages the house.
Okay, so you're not residents, you're owners of the
property.
Thank you.
So perhaps you could, perhaps you could, someone could speak to their concern about disruption to utilities.
Also, if you're shutting the road down.
Well, more than likely the road will be closed down because it's a very narrow roadway itself.
Well, it's on the street.
Right. So the problem is when you have a machine excavating in the street, it's hard to get vehicles on it. So our recommendation would be to close the street down. But police department will be there for detail here. But God forbid an emergency that happens, they'll shut the contractor down. Emergency vehicle access will be accommodated. As far as outage, nothing will be turned off until all the electrical work is put on the ground and inspected by the inspectional services, the electrical engineers there. And once that's all inspected and approved by them, at that point they'll go house to house and make the connection to each house when they convert from the overhead to the underground at that time.
How long will that take?
That's really site-specific. Specific.
We're looking at Tom Ryan with Boston College. In working with the contractors at NSTAR, they're looking at about a 3 or 4 hour shutdown to convert from overhead to underground, at which point the existing overhead service would be removed from the house and everything would be fed underground.
Okay. And the shutdown...
It would be similar ones for like your cable and your phone, coordinated with the phone companies. Would it be a similar cutover? If it was fed from overhead, now it would have to come in.
Okay.
Just taken care of by who?
Us. Yeah. We will coordinate all of it.
Okay. So no internet access?
It would, again, I would envision that being a very short, 2-3 hour shutdown also. Mm-hmm.
For a day?
But each utility, I heard each utility is a separate shutdown of 2 to 3 hours, correct?
Potentially. I'm not confirmed that with Comcast, RCN, or Verizon.
Can you coordinate that so that they're all there at once?
Are you kidding? Coordinate utility companies?
Wouldn't that be nice? I know part of the issue of undergrounding wires is not just the wires themselves, but the connection.
We are paying for
the connection from the street to the house.
Connections at the house.
Yeah,
so they're going to
all part of
the connection. Yeah, I read that.
Can I just
and the ground fault connection.
I'm sorry.
The shutdown of the street, that's going to happen for how many hours?
I would envision, in working with NSTAR, we do have some problems that go across during the day for public safety. The place would monitor the street closing. It would be reopened after work hours for public safety.
And how many days might that take?
I don't have a schedule from NSTAR. They're the biggest one on that.
Would the people be able to access their house if they needed to during the day when work is happening? What would happen then?
I would
say they needed to get home.
Depending on where, there's a bit of time when they're between Quincy and their house that they would be working with. Once they went to the north of their house, they would have access to it through the detail. So yes, I think it could be arranged if they have access.
We'll make sure that the contractor has steel plates on the road so that when, if they have to cross a turn, so they'll be able to put a plate down and the vehicle can go over.
Right. And like I said, at night after they leave, everything will be closed up and made safe for full public use.
You all done, Vicki?
Sorry.
Yeah.
You all done? Do you have something?
I just want to, just to confirm, how many days total do you think this could be going on?
The whole project?
Yeah, I mean, where this road is going to be disrupted.
It's probably going to be through the end of, there will be work on the street through the end of probably mid to late June, and then we'll be redoing sidewalks, paving. So it's going to be through the middle of August, and we're scheduled to be complete with the project.
And start date would be approximately?
Third week in May, after commencement.
Okay.
So it sounds like parking is going to be an issue at that house. So is there any place where...
I mean, we have people who use that parking lot, and it looks like between our house and the house next door, you have to go up the driveway into the back for your
the Talbea. Is that also going to be all ripped up so the cars that we have that park there are not...
We would keep that trench way in the back closer to our property, on our property side of the driveway, so your driver would be...
But still, we park for the cars that
we have. There will be limited time when they're going through that alley.
What about the Ahan House cop cars? They need to park too. Unless you're going to make provisions for them.
They may have to go on campus and park once.
And we, that was the purpose of, excuse me, Jean Levesque again, of reaching out to Patrice to sit down before this meeting to talk with you about plans to go over any of your concerns. And I'm sorry that you came here with that we didn't get a chance to talk to you beforehand, but I just want to go on the record to say that DC will work with you throughout this project. We obviously are impacted as well with the houses there. We're trying to do the best to get it done in the quickest amount of time and provide you with the least amount of issues, particularly for your tenants, because we realize you're the one private abutter on the street, and we want to work with you as we have in the past.
Anybody else have any other questions? Are you finished, ma'am?
Yeah, yes.
Are you finished?
Yes.
I'm going to close the public hearing. And I neglected to do something at the start of the meeting. Here at the start, we have Alderman Crosley, Alderman Riddle, Alderman Lappin, Alderman Gentile, Alderman Danbury, Alderman Albright, myself, Alderman Salvucci, and our committee clerk, Shauna Sullivan.
And our president, too.
In committee.
Scott.
Where's Scotty? Oh, and our board president, Scott Lennon. Didn't see him hiding over there. Is there any other discussion on as far as the committee is concerned? Yes, Deb.
I have a comment of a different nature. When I looked at this, aside from seeing a nice opportunity to improve the roadway and bring in new fixtures and so forth, I noticed a couple things. One is BC is paying for everything except Newton will continue to pay the electricity on the light, and they're going to be metered. And so that means actually, as I understand it, that we'll be paying more than we pay now because it costs, there's a premium to meter the lights. Most of our street lights are not metered. And that's just a point. You start with that. I tried to understand the specifications for the lights, and I couldn't. I had to call John and then Clint Chuckle to find out what's going in here. And the reason I'm bringing this up is there's a large contingent in Newton who are very interested in showcasing LED lamping. And if this isn't the perfect opportunity to do that, I don't know what is.
I'll respond to that.
Thank you.
We agree with you. We are on campus trying to convert all of our lights over to LED fixtures also. The problem we have is the color of the LED that is now the standard for those fixtures is the real bright blue-white light. You can't get the Kelvin 3000 color yet.
Hmm.
We're working with the manufacturer to develop the fixture that goes into these heads, at which point we're going to convert our campus. So
and
we picked this fixture,
well,
which is probably a lot more efficient than high-pressure sodium. They're a little bit less than an LED.
So I looked at the ballast, and I couldn't figure out
what the... It's an isotron ballast,
okay,
which is a... It's an induction. And
okay.
It's not as efficient as LED, but it's not too far away either. So, and as technology gets caught up with the color of the light that matches our standard on campus, which is that soft white.
So it'll be cost-effective for you to replace these lamps?
Yes.
Even though you're using a fairly efficient fixture now, more efficient than high-pressure sodium already?
Yeah,
okay.
We've got how many lights on this campus? Hundreds that we're looking at. About 6 years ago, we started replacing the high pressures with these isotrons.
And
now we're looking at doing it again because there's more efficiency out there.
Okay, so just, I don't know if you have any numbers offhand, but I got some data from Clint Chuckle, who's in our engineering department, who has a hobby. He's very interested in city lighting and actually used to do a lot of the work in the city around our streetlights. So he says that our cost for running these lamps is going to go from about $234 a year to $672 a year just because of the metering requirement. So you know, in the scheme of things, that's not huge, but if you were to relamp them with the LEDs, do you have any idea if that would cut the electricity in half, or...
I'm not sure if the cost is because of the meter, or...
The cost is because of the meter. Yeah. The extra cost is because of the meter. Right now, it only costs us about... we've already changed these to high-pressure sodium, so you're changing them to induction lighting, and then you're thinking of changing them to LED lighting, and I'm just... You know, I know there's just a lot of people looking for a demonstration on this type of lighting, so...
I don't know if I have the actual cost of the LED based on that. I don't know what the wattage of the lower Kelvin light source is going to actually run until I get the picture developed.
So okay.
In between the ones that are out there now and the other ones, 25 to 30% savings, I think, on the usage.
Okay.
We gotta look at long term what that means to us.
I'd
what
be
the cost of the replacement side.
Interested if there's a way of keeping in touch with BC about your plans in this area.
We'll work closely with
right.
Okay.
We've
already met with some manufacturing reps about getting this process started and how quickly they can develop it. We can follow
up. Terrific. Thank you.
Mark. So I just want to follow up on something Alderman Crossley asked. My understanding is that it's a $400 more a year in cost.
A year
in cost because it's metered. Is there any way we can not use the meters and pay the equivalent of what we're paying now if we're not all incurring what is just an extra cost of metering? And it strikes me that's a little bit silly.
Well, what is the purpose of the meter? If they're not metered now and we're paying the bill, then why would you care if they're metered? I don't understand.
NSTAR requires the meter because it's a specialty light. The 10 specialty lights that we're doing on Commonwealth Avenue as part of that project, those 10 lights are metered.
And so we pay...
You pay a higher rate for the metered light because of the administrative cost that they have to read the meter.
Three times as much?
Yeah, or per year on the meter. And again, there's only eight lights here. Now the idea was once they do convert to LED lights, that differential cost will go way down because the LED lights are much more efficient than the lights that they're proposing now. So we're building
there's another benefit too.
I'm not.
The only way to do it without the meter is to put the exact same light that's in there now, and that's not what they exact.
I'm forgive me for being confused, and I think there's a great project. Don't get me wrong. You're improving the neighborhood. You're putting the lines underground. It sounds like you're addressing the neighbors' concerns. I just don't get this idea that we're paying three times as much money for the privilege of getting a meter attached. That makes no sense to me.
That's an NSTAR issue.
Well, but...
Because they have the same argument.
I know that's an NSTAR issue, but we're large consumers of this type of thing. What can we do rather than just throw up our hands and say it's an NSTAR issue? It seems silly. I can't imagine what costs $400 a year to measure. Can't possibly imagine.
Yeah, it's not. It's the amount of energy you know, used over the eight lights, over the amount of time they're on, times a different rate per kilowatt hour because of the meter. The slightly more rate per kilowatt hour because of the admin cost of the meter.
Wow.
All the other city lights are not metered. There's a flat rate, but there's no meter to read, so you pay a different rate. It's just the way NSTAR does their business.
I'm still...
It's very confusing.
More than confused, concerned, because it just seems to me if we have this other project in the city where we have 10 lights, are we paying three times as much for those?
We haven't figured out the differential cost.
Well, it seems to me we ought to, and it seems to me there's some way of... Somebody ought to be talking and start a higher level, perhaps, to try to move that along.
I believe the mayor has had discussions with that. Other issues, I'm not sure about this.
Well,
I'm sure there's one.
There's a lot of issues.
I know we do. I would just ask we add that to the list. And I'll leave it at that.
Susan?
I wasn't going to ask about the metering. I was going to change the topic, actually, because what is the purpose of the metering? Why do we have meters on these lights and not
because
the lights that's passed over?
Because
it's
different lights that are at a different wattage than the regular street lights that we have on the streets throughout Newton.
Okay, so the purpose is...
It's a different wattage, it's a different light.
So they want to charge us at a different rate?
Because they have no way of estimating what those are. Their new policy...
I see.
Ever since we bought the lights in the year 2000, their new policy is to have all these specialty lights metered so they know exactly what the usage is.
Okay. I was going to change the topic to talk about the undergrounding, so if somebody wants to continue to talk about lights, I can wait.
I have one more question on the meeting.
You're all done for now?
Susan.
Okay. Who made the decision to put these lights in? Was it a city decision or was it a VC decision? Who chose the more expensive lighting that requires a meter?
VC chose the specialty light to match the campus lights.
Okay. Is it a fair question to ask VC if they would pay the differential in some way? I don't know how that could be done, but the choice is yours.
We can take it back. We're spending, how much is this cost? $3 million.
We appreciate all that. And this is, other people have said this is a good project, I think it's a great project, but the city is now being saddled with triple the cost of electricity.
But the city is no longer going to maintain those.
Right.
The maintenance responsibility goes with BC. If the light bulb goes out, they replace it. Whereas currently, if the light bulb goes out, we replace it. So we're passing that maintenance burden on to BC.
Or if the pole gets hit.
It's their problem.
Okay.
They replace
it.
So that the whole maintenance issue goes to BC is no longer a city responsibility.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, so if you want them to take it back, we need to have a discussion about that because there's a few things to take into consideration.
Yeah, right. Yeah. All right, I'm done for now.
Well, I wasn't going to... I had another question. It wasn't really on the light, so... Susan was waiting.
So,
except to say one thing. I don't want to ruin Mark's night, but, I mean, we still get charged for lights that aren't even working, right?
Yeah. Because you're going to ruin my night
We should talk.
There's about 50 of charges for all of them. Right. Whether a light's working or not, we still get charged
That's
for
right.
it.
I'm wrecked.
I just wanted to say that this idea of undergrounding the wires is a terrific project, and I hope that you will. I mean, we spoke a little bit before the meeting, but I hope that you will be able to provide guidance to us in our endeavors to try and do undergrounding. How are your negotiations going with all utilities? How much is it costing, and so forth? I think that you can be a resource to us in what we're trying to do. So I think it's great, and I hope you'll help us when we come to you and ask you for all the TA on what actually happened here.
Reach out to Gina. We'll be glad to sit down and share whatever information you have.
Thank you.
And we had great assist from the city and from Jeff Knight and from, it really depends on how many utilities are actually out on the poles, but we had good coordination meetings. But it's you have to do a lot of outreach and try to get everybody to coordinate.
I'm going to move the item, but along with moving the item, I would like to suggest or add to it some kind of language that if the homeowners request the college for a meeting to get more information exactly, and as you said, you were willing to do this prior to the meeting. I wish it had happened, then they'd have less questions tonight, but it didn't. But going forward, I think it would be good if the college were to accommodate and have a meeting so that these folks can understand exactly what's going to happen during construction. And in particular, when it comes to parking plans and access to property, that you almost create, with the help of engineering, a mini management plan, a construction management plan, like we would do for a lot of projects around the city. So it's spelled out what's going to happen with the parking ahead of time, so that you don't run into an issue halfway in the middle of the project where they're upset because their tenants are complaining to them. So I think, again, you say you've reached out to them, so now it's their turn to let you know that they want to sit down with you, and you really should put some pretty simple bullets in writing so everybody knows what's going to happen.
Okay.
We did, when we did the Stokes project, we, on the blast, we did a construction management plan with that. We notified the neighbors. We met individually with them. We know that they have tenants. Some of them have been Boston College students. So we were aware of what's going on there. And I said, I'm more than happy to sit down with them and go through that and put that together. It needs to work for everybody.
It's something that you'll file with our engineer so that it's a record of it?
Sure. Yes. Yeah.
As a follow-up to that, Gene and I have talked about all of our people in Covington also, is that during construction, we plan on doing every other week update of the College Road occupants, what's happening in the next couple of weeks. Be glad to include you in on that, or your tenants if they want to join. But we're going to have to update our people, as well as you guys, of what's going to happen in the next 2 weeks, and where the disruption is going to be, and where the contractor's going to be. So we plan on doing that anyway. I'll be on site daily. That's my project. I'm going to be there. So
right.
You can always call me.
In my neighborhood, the cell's doing a project, it seems, every year, and they do that. They like Friday, they'll send out on email a construction report of what you can expect for the following week. It is helpful.
Yep, we've done it with residence hall work. I've done it on the main campus I just finished up the Bishop Peterson job in the St. John's Seminary with right next door. We had bi-weekly meetings with them to let them know what was happening, and it works pretty well.
Your motion?
I moved it along with the amendment that there will be a construction management plan that will be developed and filed with the engineering department.
Very good. Any more discussion in committee? All in favor?
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Ruth Ann wanted us to bring Jean. Yeah, are they meeting now too? I saw her car here, so I know she's here.
You
want to take the NAN up first?
Okay, next I'm going to take up the last item because it's an NAN. 374-11 is on the mayor requesting authorization to appropriate and expend a sum of $25,000 from FY11 free cash for the purpose of repairing and replacing a broken jail cell door and track at police headquarters. The job is done. So I'll entertain a motion for NAN.
I'll move it.
So moved. Any more discussion? None? All in favor?
What are we doing?
NAN to track the door. The police station. They did the job.
They did it, right?
Yes. So we have no
more.
NAN. We're going to get what's in that.
Scotty. So I have some number of holes in this.
This is your brain is underwater.
I'm forgetting
it
the
is.
Number, but it's not an insignificant number. Where
I'd like to see it happen.
NSTAR and the city are in a protracted legal battle about
the
responsibility of the light underground.
Especially
and we've happened here, we've happened here three times when Sandra was chair last term.
What the hell, the house and
everything?
Can't
beat that. I had no idea how frustrating relations are. Just no idea.
We'll get some good data on our house.
So we're, much more we're not going to get any of this. What's the mayor doing?
The only difference is the right pay is right for the job.
As I understand,
if
the mayor has gotten
city,
involved in the legal
work. It's not by NSTAR.
I don't understand.
It's not like you're doing the work. This company is the police paying the whole car.
Right.
But if DC wasn't paying the whole car, it would be me and you.
Marie Lawler.
That's the part that disturbs me.
And Star.
Why should I pay to have some streetlights done
Representative?
Boston College?
Well, it has to,
not at their heads.
Like for Needham Street, there could be some
problems. Well, that sounds like why should I pay for Needham Street?
Well, if it
happens. I've been on Needham Street once a year.
You know.
But we get a lot of taxes.
I don't mean to be insulting.
We get a lot of taxes.
Yeah.
People doing business on Needham Street.
You play hell trying to get the pay. All the great players in Newton pay to
get a question.
Okay, we'll
argue
about that
later.
Why this is so
difficult. We're just waiting for one person.
Declaration as to who's right, who's wrong, and if we lose, we lose.
Okay.
At least we know. It doesn't do any good.
I don't remember why they couldn't be resolved. Maybe others do. But the NSTAR issue with that we're in this protracted legal battle with NSTAR over whose responsibility it is to go a certain distance underground to hook up some number of lights. And so when Lenny says that we're paying for those lights, we pay for them because NSTAR assesses us according to how many lights we have in the city, period.
Not how many we use.
No, they assess a value according to... You know,
well, they say it's our responsibility, and we say it's their responsibility.
So why don't we just ask a judge to decide who's right?
Get a summary judge.
There are a couple of things, because they're
catch-22. And we should get them in here again. They're absolutely the worst utility.
Okay, the last item for the evening is number 90-12. Is on the mayor discussion regarding the revised stormwater fee structure that would meet the purpose of the stormwater fee by providing a more equitable structure that takes into account the size of the property and its resultant impact on the city's drainage system. Mr. Russell, if you will, please.
Thank you, sir. Also, have Maria Rose here, our environmental engineer, and Dave Grossi. Just real quick, I want to just give a quick overview of back in 2006, the city adopted a stormwater fee ordinance, and it's basically in the sewer ordinance. It's not a standalone stormwater ordinance, it's in the sewer, established in the sewer ordinance. And at that time, we established a flat fee of $150 for commercial properties and $25 for residential properties. Right now, our budget based on that is roughly about $725,000 a year. We still a little more than that, but based on collections, we budget typically $725,000. We've been doing that since 2006. And now, if you recall, in that CIP presentation I made, the stormwater slide, basically I had a chart that showed that in 2006, we were able to budget $180,000 for capital improvements, and that shrunk down to $2,000 in fiscal year 2012. Reason being is that salaries go up. For instance, we got disposal of catch basin waste, that's under this budget as well, it increases. And they said these costs are increasing. The capital is sort of a balancing line item first because it's just a fixed cost based on the flood fees. So what we're coming for you with is to establish a standalone stormwater ordinance, number one, which is going to be required under the new EPA regulations, which is probably due out sometime in the next month or two. And in that, we're going to establish a fee based on equitability, based on impervious cover for three-family and homes and larger and commercial development. How we establish them is we basically use the GIS mapping. So we know every parcel in the community, how much impervious cover they have based on GIS mapping. So it wasn't this daunting task that we had to go out and measure all this impervious cover. It was something that was rather simple that we pulled off the GIS. How we established the fee is, I'm going to try to explain as best I can, and if I usually apologize, but what we used is that the average single-family house lot in Newton has roughly 2,600 square feet of impervious cover. That's on the average. That's across the board. What we did is we assigned what we call one equivalent residential unit, 2,600 square feet. So now let's just say we look at a property that has 26,000 square feet of impervious cover. We divide it by 2,600, which would then be 10 ERUs or equivalent residential units. We multiply that by 25, which is our base cost now for residential property. And that's how we established how what the fee would be for a commercial or a residential property that's three family lots.
So that's $250?
Right. That would be for a property that has 26,000 square feet of impervious cover.
Can I ask you a question about that? 2,600?
26,000.
So when you come up with, I'm sorry.
2,600 is one unit. One equivalent, one ERU, we call it. I got a hand.
2,600 times 3, is it 3 units?
No.
There's an exhibit A. There's an exhibit A.
It
gives a little example.
Yeah. If you look at this, right? If you could pass this around, if I could.
Everybody has this in their packet?
Yeah,
there's an example in the back of the ordinance as well. But this is sort of a graphic example that I put together. If you can just pass this around. I can find out, I can play tomorrow, but I don't know exactly.
Well, we actually probably have it in the backup.
But if it's one of the top 7,
it is.
Okay.
Cheryl, do you have a question?
Oh, yeah. Well, if you want to finish your presentation,
you can. Yeah, I mean, if I can just refer to this, you see there's two parcels that currently are on Lincoln and Boylston Street. One has roughly over 230,000 square feet of impervious cover, and the other has just over an acre, roughly 44,000 square feet of impervious cover. Right now, they both pay $150 based on the flat fee mechanism. If we were to establish our new fee, if you divide $2,600 into 230,000. To get how many units they would be built, and each unit is billed at $25.
Even for commercial?
Even for commercial, correct. Okay. So now, same thing with the 44,000 square foot parcel, divide 44,000 by 2,600, which is one ERU, then you multiply $25 per ERU. And you can see what the actual bills would be under the new ordinance in the tab here.
So what these make sense to me, but the two-family house?
Two-family houses are, the other thing we did is that when we looked at the GIS mapping to get the average impervious cover for a single-family house, we get 2,600. We also looked at the two-family houses, and roughly, again, on average, two-family houses have about 50% more impervious cover than single-family houses.
Driveways for cars.
Right. So what we're going to propose is that for single-family houses, still going to stay $25. Because it's a 50% increase in impervious cover, we're going to establish a flat fee for two-family houses at $37.50, which is 150 times the residential unit. And then three-family above and commercial property would be based on impervious cover.
This is true.
Make sense?
I just want to add to it, it's commercial, but it's really commercial, institutional, and tax exempt. So it's all others. So it's residential, and then all others from three-family apartment buildings, commercial, institutional, industrial, manufacturing. They would all pay per impervious area, normalized to
Yes, Cheryl.
Two questions. You said, is it a state or federal law that's requiring?
EPA is requiring that we have some sort of an established stormwater ordinance.
Ordinance, but are they requiring we have a
not fee? Not the fee, absolutely not.
Okay.
No.
The second question was, how are we dealing with city-owned property? We get a lot of impervious city.
No, we're going to pay as well. We're going to pay as well. Right now, we pay water and sewer bills. So whoever gets a water and sewer bill is going to get a stormwater fee bill.
And do we know approximately how much that will be for the city?
Yes.
If we're not, what is that? Did I not
read that? No. I mean, what I can pass out to you is I also brought just some of the spreadsheet. We actually ran a bill run on GIS mapping and that sort of thing. And this is, it's over 1,000 pages. I just included the first two pages. I included the first two pages just to give the top 70 fees, if you will. And the highest one is actually the Riverside development. the Riverside property, which is, well, second and third is north and new south.
Is there
a lot of I could figure that out.
That's what I was looking for.
Yeah, I could figure that out.
And not the change in from the what the bill is now.
Yep.
They are paying right now. Most
right.
Of the
people
are paying the change at
150.
Is BC paying 150 right now?
Yes.
So do so. Okay, so you don't have the whole number for new.
No, I don't have. I can certainly get that. I can either email it to everybody.
That would just be good to know. Yeah. I mean, if we're going to collect a certain amount, sure. And we're paying a third of it. You know, it'd be just an interesting.
You finish, Cheryl.
Yeah. Okay.
Susan.
So I think it's a great idea. My only question is, you know, the $25 that we the charge that we have now is sort of, I don't know what it was based on. I mean, it's sort of like you're basing it on $25, which.
Right.
Where did that come from? Maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong, maybe it right. Should be higher.
What I envision to happen in the future is that, based on the calculation that we've done, if we adopt the fee as we're presenting, we should generate an additional $300,000 over and above the $725,000 that we generate now. Well, here's the thing. What I would like to use that for is to develop a strategic CIP like we did for the water and sewer. Which would then, we would revisit this rate yearly like we do water and sewer to make sure it's
the same. So that you can base it on some real numbers.
Exactly.
I like that. That's
exactly.
Good.
Yeah. So.
No, Deb is next. Hold on. Are you going to respond to that?
If I could just add to you, where did the $25 came from?
Yeah.
We actually backed into that figure. What we looked at is, what do we want to start this program up for a stormwater division? So we looked at a six-person crew plus an environmental engineer, plus the expenses we typically have, and some funding for capital projects. So we really look to say we probably need, for starters, $700,000, $750,000. And then we kind of back into the figure for that and figure out what the rate was going to be.
But since you know, you can understand better the total scope of the problem, and we may not want to take 30 years to fix it. So this, you can get a better number after you do the research.
Right, we can certainly get a better number now.
Yeah.
We do know the number we have currently is not working anymore. It's for detail. We don't have any money for capital projects anymore. So we know we need to increase it. We think this is the right methodology to get to it, even though we'll have to continue to refine what the right number is.
Okay.
And I would think that I was there when they established the first one and helped a lot in that. Just that we positioned ourselves by having this already in place to be recognized by EPA and even the Charles River Watershed Association as, you know, strategically doing the work that we need to do with eliminating our sewage problems into our drains. But there's certainly more work to be done, and there's stricter regulations coming out, a new permit that we're going to have, and there'll be more things that we're going to see very soon that will cost more money. So this will be the step in the right direction, but the initial $725,000, initially $700,000, did come from looking at what's the bare bones minimum. I mean, it really was like a bare bones minimum.
Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
Just a quick question. So will you have to be coming back to us every year or two to change the base rate?
Yeah, similar to what we do now with water and sewer.
Okay.
Correct.
All right, so that's the plan going forward then.
Yeah.
Fine.
So I like this proposal, and one thing you didn't talk about at all, and I thought people might be interested, is on what basis do you give abatements, and in not for financial hardship, but because this is based on impervious cover, and on the one hand, for new construction, we require a very rigorous standard of stormwater management on site, which reduces the burden of the, you know, the amounts. Like for Riverside, they're going to be putting in extensive stormwater management systems.
Yeah, and, that's actually in your packet. It was a two-page document in addition to the ordinance, which basically just gives guidelines on how we would give credits to different residences or commercial development based on if they were to, you know, use a lot of infiltration on their property to reduce the amount of runoff. there are certain credits there. Water quality and some of the gas stations that are discharging and the potential for contamination with oil and gas, that sort of thing. Those types of structures also would generate some credits as well. One thing we added also was that if somebody comes in and they dispute that our GIS mapping is wrong, and they have an actual physical site plan that they had drawn up by an engineer or a surveyor, and it shows that our GIS mapping is off by a little bit, then we would defer to their site plan, and they're able to get credits for that as well.
And those two documents, the guidelines are now, those have been in place since 2006. So we have had quite a number of applicants apply for credits applications over the last few years.
You all done?
Yes.
Any questions for us?
So you think it'll just get $300,000 more than the subject? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And is that with the amount the city would be paying in?
Mm-hmm.
To take it out of it?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the net?
No, that's the gross.
That's the gross including what the city would pay?
Yes.
But that's why I want to know what the city's going to pay.
Yeah.
You know, if the city's paying $250,
oh.
I mean...
I don't think it's fair. But that's okay.
All right. No, and that's enough, huh? Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, again, so, you know, we wanted to keep the residential rate the same for this first round, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
We want to get the concept adopted. And then from here on, evaluating each year.
Okay. And what will you do with the extra $300,000?
That's what we're going to use to develop a CIP, a strategic CIP like we did for the water and sewer.
Develop a plan?
Develop a plan, yes. Correct.
It'll take $300,000 to develop a plan.
Right.
Well, explain what that is.
Why?
Go ahead,
Fred can talk about this. In great detail, but it turns out that we haven't done the assessment of the current condition of most of the system. So the $300,000 is to do the assessment, figure out the priorities, figure out the plan.
Okay, so it's for an assessment.
What I think we should ask Fred and Dave is this goes through the board. When might that assessment be done? Would you be coming back to us with such a plan? And therefore, then there'll be a really thoughtful response to being able to say, so what should rates be going forward, look out the next 10, 15, 20 years, what can we project for needed investments? And what does that mean for rates? It's a similar process to what we've just been through for water and sewer, but we have now we're just beginning it for stormwater.
So would we have to wait till we collected 300 before we started the, how long would that take? Is that a year or? That's only if everybody pays, or I'm just wondering.
Well, there's money in reserve.
Right.
It could always be.
We had what was coming.
We had half a million.
And we replace it as we receive.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, what we would hope to do is have something next spring when we come back on the next budget cycle.
I think Susan's next.
No, I've got my question.
You're all set?
Yeah.
Deborah?
So I happened to be talking to Dave Wilkinson on another matter, and he wanted to talk about the stormwater fees because he said that this has been proposed before, and he mentioned your name, Maria, and there's some administrative process that needs to be sorted out. He was concerned that we'd be ready. I don't know what this means. I was, by your quizzical look, I'm thinking it seems sounds new to you, but you do. Okay, so he cautioned that if we're going forward with this, that we'd be ready to do the accounting necessary according to the metric that you're proposing.
Well, I think you're talking about the interaction with units.
Your computer system and billing.
Yes, currently we use Munis does our billing, water and sewer. Right now, simple with the stormwater fee, we would have to have Munis come in and interact with our system now to generate or develop a new
for billing
so that we can build similar to how we build water and sewer, where we just basically put an increase in it and change. So and it would be different for each parcel. So now Karen Kirby brought this up to me about 2 weeks ago. She's already contacted me and it's about this.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so that's already been...
It's solved or you were working it out?
No, we're working on it. It will be solved. Though.
Great. Okay. Good, thanks.
Anybody else? Lenny?
Does anybody know that this is being discussed, especially some of the larger stakeholders and all this? I mean, to go from $150 to several thousand dollars, it's going to be it's going to have a different impact depending on whether it's a condominium versus, say, a college institution. Has there been any outreach?
None so far.
Has there been any talk about if this were to be adopted, if it's something that should be, that people might have the option of, so this would be built over the year,
right.
Was there any discussion about possibly phasing it in, where it's such a large increase?
Our thought is that we're keeping the residential rate the same.
Yeah.
So that was our phasing, is that we're keeping that the same and then adjusting the commercial rates.
But I think that we're talking about, it's fine. Nobody has anything to say about single family because it's not changing. So I'm obviously not concerned about that. And, the two family, $12.50, I'm not saying it's nothing, but it's a little bit different than $8,000. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I think all of a sudden people are going to open up their bill and see the bill 20, 30, 40 times as higher than what it was the same time a year ago. I just don't know if we should be trying to address that somehow.
There's no question in my mind that it's going to open a Pandora's box, I'll tell you right now, because if you're jumping from $150 to $2,000 or $3,000, somebody's going to squawk like hell. Susan.
Well, so just to follow up on that, the institutions, there's BCs on here, other institutions. Their budgets for July 1 are put to bed months ago. So this is a cost that they won't have planned on for the coming year.
I have a question related to that. Do you have any idea? So these rates are related roughly to the size of the entity because it's size of impervious cover. So to get an $8,000 bill, you have to own a lot of property. And if this bill comes in your water bill, do you have any? And it's most people don't notice it as an element of your water bill. Do you have any idea with some of these, or could we take a look and see relative to the size of their water bill, which is, is their water bill in the order of $100,000 a year, and so this is $8,000 more? Yeah. What's the percentage increase of the bill that they're going to be looking at? So
we can look at that.
Might be a reasonable thing to do, in which case maybe this can be handled by the mayor making an announcement, perhaps, but about the stormwater fees, but also bill stuffers, letting people...
Public hearing.
Marie, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I thought that Alderman Gentile brought up a good point. I was actually going to bring it up to Fred, because the high stakeholders that are going to need to know and not just see it. They're going to need to have some outreach, so we could, I'm sure we could do that. Coordinate either meetings or individual letters to those that would be the most impacted. Like, for example, Arbor Point at the Woodland T Station, they currently pay $25 a year because they're considered residential, and they're going to go up to $1,653, and they need to know that.
But it's more than needing to know. It's that they've got their budgets all in order already for July 1, and this is something they hadn't planned on.
Right.
So it's like maybe you should tell them and then have it a year later.
Yeah. Or maybe January 1st or something.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe mm-hmm. something.
Maybe, and then as...
Well, let her finish.
That's it. And then there are some that I think that definitely just some outreach would be would behoove us, because the first time we did this, we were rushed, and there was a lot. There was a little bit of bad press, but that was only because there were other more important things consuming the city at the time. But I would prefer, having gone through it in not the most pleasant fashion, I would prefer to go through more smoothly this time. So I think all for outreach in that regard.
But like, for instance, you know, I'm also thinking of a place like, say, the Pheasant School. I realize that it's a private school, but it's a small school. And I see it on here, not only on the first page, but it's also on the second page, because some of these places have multiple addresses. And I don't know if it's on, you know, if it goes further down. So it could be even more money that's on here. But even the two figures here, you've got $2,600. And then you've got another $1,100. So, you know, you're pushing $3,000. And, you know, they have, as Susan points out, you know, they have a budget that they have to stick with, you know, annually. And they're a pretty good neighbor, okay? They work with the city. They open up some of their facilities to the city, especially their fields and things and their gyms. In ways that a lot of other places don't. They're pretty helpful, and you know, I just worry about creating, you know, some bad will that in the end what's going to cost us more than we're gaining. And I just, you can't lose sight of that, because I mean, if you talk to Parks and Rec and accommodations that a place like Pheasant does, and there's some other places, I just think you don't want to lose sight of that. That's kind of what I was saying about BC. I know you were saying like $400, but we just
get in return like
we. But we just, right. I mean, the mayor just got, I mean, what was it, $300,000 from it in the school. So I don't think it's worth risking creating ill will when we just got that kind of a thing. So I'm just throwing it out there. Yeah,
I hear what my colleagues are saying about the notice, and I think it's a fair point that. To see people get enormous increases without some real outreach and not just outreach, but some I think I heard Cheryl say some opportunity to then be heard, I think is important. With that said, you know, I understand it's a big increase, but it seems like a really worthy, appropriate thing to do, and we have the same problems that we had with other with the other parts of our water and sewer system. So I'm in favor of the concept. I hear that you know, this could upset some budgets. I will say I'm not really swayed by that as much, given that most of these are very large institutions and we're talking $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. But I'm perfectly fine with some delay, as long as we then provide notice and opportunity to be heard, and then, you know, if we have to vote on it.
That's a public
theory. I think it's fair to give people the opportunity to be heard. If we're missing something or it's ill-conceived, we need to let people know that.
Well, actually, Mark pretty much said it for me. I appreciate the need to get out to people as well. And I think it should come right from the mayor's office, actually, to businesses and maybe through the Needham Chamber of Commerce and so forth. I mean, it doesn't make sense that this would have happened already. This is the first time we've talked about it around this table. But the seriousness of the problem was evident to some of us when we were looking at the sewer and the water system, and to realize that not only is our stormwater system in tremendously poor condition, just from the number of examples we were shown, but we don't even know what most of it looks like. And what you can see is sometimes, you know, structures that used to exist, and now there's just a hole, and so, you know, it's going to cave in. And we know we have sources of pollution that groups like the, Crystal Lake Conservancy are starting to measure from stormwater runoff, what goes into that water body, and we have others. And I know this year at least of two projects that came before us here. Came before us here, and one was fixed by a private developer where they encountered stormwater pipes that were collapsed underground and causing flooding. So my guess is, I mean, what do I know, but just from this anecdotal information, that we need to get our arms around the condition of this system as soon as we possibly can. And it's a bizarre system because we don't have any other way of paying for it. There's no extra money in our operating budget, certainly with all the kinds of work we're looking at. And it's a system of assessment that is becoming more commonplace as a way of tackling this kind of system. So,
I'll get you, Maria, in a moment.
I know there are other people who want to speak, but I would like to move hold with the understanding that we get a plan from either Public Works or the Mayor's Office of how outreach will happen and what the increased cost to the city will be because of these fees. And if there's any information about other towns and fees they're charging, that would be good to have too.
Maria, you want to say something else?
Oh, I forgot to answer one of Madam Crossley's questions about water bill versus stormwater. I don't know it for the new proposals, but I can tell you firsthand that there were small businesses on the current old system that were under that were paying more under stormwater than their water, as little as it was. But there was like little tiny, little flower shops in the corner that got the $150 a year fee, and so therefore we're getting $37.50 a quarter. They were only a flower shop and using so little water. And it bothered me greatly that, you know, there wasn't a better system for them. So this is, I'm pretty confident, this is the practical and equitable way to do it. I don't have numbers off the top of my head for the new system, what the water bill would be versus this, but I know in the old system, in the current system, it's not good.
And in that case, then Maria, that for instance, that flower shop would pay $25, which is a little bit
rather. They use a lot of water for
flowers, but it's not. Well,
no, they just have one little bathroom. I mean, they actually went on. They're not in business anymore.
They didn't want to use water at all.
We've led them, so they had to get out of business.
So can I ask you a question about the credit? So we have projects, new projects that come in, and they have to agree to keep all the runoff on site. So how far does the credit go? Does it exempt them totally from
No, I think it is. It says the maximum credit can be 75%. Right.
Do you want to know why we exceed?
Yes, could you?
Okay. So the best way to explain it is,
go ahead, sorry.
No problem. So even if somebody puts in a system that handles 7 inches of rainfall over a 24-hour period of time, you cannot guarantee with 100% certainty that 100% of all storms that happen, you will never have runoff leading your parcel. So that's the primary reason. It also is that we're not an island. So every single parcel is not an island. You do get benefit by the catch basin and the storm drain pipes in your street. But mostly I just try to say that if we get a flash flood, like the Temple Library and that has completely wiped out cars there, that happens so quick, you can't guarantee that any system that's designed would handle 100% of all storms without any runoff ever. And so that's primarily the reason. And that, I would say 75% compared to other communities, we're generous. There are other communities that only offer 50%. Because there is so much other benefits, like water quality, all of our brooks. We have 22 brooks for the city. We have lots of maintenance to deal with that, as well as water quality issues. But that doesn't sell too well, so I try to stick to the other point.
Yeah, that's good.
Money?
I think that any time that you are talking about increasing fees, and I don't think it's any less important because we're talking more commercial, industrial, or nonprofit, But anytime you're talking about increasing fees 5, 10, 15, 20 times, and up to 50 times what it currently is, that's a major change. And I don't think you can do a major change without having a public hearing. So I'm not even sure that we're there. I think we need to get more information before we're even ready to have a public hearing. But I really hope that this committee, before it comes to finance, will plan on having a public hearing, even if it's, you know, we know a lot of the feedback that we're going to get, but I still can't see how you can impose something like this without hearing what people have to say.
No question, we have to go to the public. Let me ask another question. Do we have all the information that we want from Fred now? Is there anything else that we haven't?
I can just read them off. What's going to be the total municipal cost for municipal properties? The comparison of water and sewer fees, which is easy to do. Just a public outreach plan on how we would deal with the public, and then see how other cities and towns are dealing with the similar issues.
Is there anything else anybody wants to add to that? Yes.
I was only going to suggest. I totally agree with the concept of having a public hearing, but we should check with a lot of partners to make sure to see if it would be a requirement going forward. We require a public hearing. You said you wanted to go on the concept of having it the same as water sewer, like every year. We have a public hearing for water sewer every year, so I'm assuming we would want to do the same thing, right? You want to check.
Yeah, they actually have a copy of everything.
That each year.
They've got a copy of everything we're doing, and we just haven't had a chance to get it.
But I still think, you don't point it out to them. I think I heard you say earlier that's the concept you wanted to go on.
Right.
And we do hold a public hearing every year for water sewer rates, so.
Right. So he has everything there. We're in agreement, that's it. Okay, we have a motion to hold. All in favor? 7-0.
Thank you.
We are adjourned, I hope. Motion?
Motion to
adjourn.
Thank you, Chair. I like that.
Wow.
Good job.
Wow. Hey. You okay?